When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There is a kind of a lyrical, mythical quality to it. And the second reason I picked it was because for years I've said I can't stand Shia LaBeouf, and this film proved me wrong.
I actually have a lot of time for Shia LaBeouf. If you're
Have you seen the Transformers films though?
I've seen a couple of them.
Okay.
I think that scene on the water on the raft is probably the scene of the film actually for me.
I can't think of another example off the top of my head where the hero punches a child in the face.
It's just really kind of fun. And, yeah, you know, seeing him all greased up and lubed up, escaping out of the bars in the window. You know what this film is going to be, and it's really joyful.
Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of FlixWatch Podcast. I'm joined by Ben.
Hello.
Will.
Hello.
And Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about the Peanut Butter Falcon.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us today, we have Ben and Will. If you would like to say hello, please, and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, my name's Ben. I run a audio production company and audio branding firm, Rockwood Audio, and we work with podcasts like this fantastic podcast.
Ben is our editor, is what he's clearly trying to say.
Yeah, so I've been let out of the editing dungeon for one day only, into the light.
90 minutes maybe.
And yeah, we work on pop culture podcasts, and we help people create audio and music that fits their show.
And we should say Rockwood is spelled R-O-K-K. I mean, you hear it on the intro and outro. We do spell it out, but R-O-K-K Wood Audio is how you spell Rockwood, in case you're looking for Ben's work.
Yeah, it seemed like a great idea, but then you always have to say with two Ks, but there we are.
And Will, who are you?
Hi, I'm Will Rowe. I'm a producer on the Stories of Our Times podcast, which is a daily news show, which is from the Times and Sunday Times newspaper. So yeah, every Monday to Friday, it's sort of half hourly episodes, deep dives into the world of news and politics, etc. I guess it's, you know, the UK equivalent of the Daily over in the States. Yeah.
I bet it's been quite a few years for your guests in terms of news cycles.
Yeah, it's been an interesting one. We only launched in March, though.
Oh, okay.
So just we've been
at the zenith.
Yeah, exactly. There's been one story this year that we've covered in quite a lot of depth. I'm not going to mention the C word, but there you go.
I've not heard it used as a C word, but yes, I think it's appropriate. Will, you're a returnee. What episodes were you on previously, if people want to go and delve back into our FlixWatcher catalogue to find you?
Absolutely. Well, it's lovely to be back, first of all. The last two films I did Nebraska, which starred Bruce Dern, and then the other film I did was a terrible film that my friend Chris Smith picked. I can't remember. It had Jack Black in it. I wasn't a fan, so...
I can't even remember what it's called. It was that weird one.
I'll find it in a second. But Bruce Dern does make an appearance in this film, which you're talking about today, aren't we? Which is always nice.
Yeah.
So it's quite telling. It's quite timely that you've joined us for this episode. And you didn't choose the film this time. It's Ben. And that film is The Peanut Butter Falcon. Ben, can you tell us why you chose it and give us a brief synopsis?
Yeah, so it's kind of a classic buddy movie in a way, but it has a few twists. So after escaping from his assisted living facility, Zach meets up with a kind of local outlaw ne'er-do-well on the run, and together they embark on a mythic quest to find Zach's hero, the pro wrestler, the saltwater redneck, so he can learn the art of wrestling.
And why did you choose it?
I chose it for two reasons. One, it's rare that a feel-good movie actually kind of pulls it off, and I think this one does. It's sort of knowingly pushing your buttons, but it does it with such kind of style and charm that you don't really mind. So it's kind of impossible not to like, I think. It walks that line really well. And the second reason I picked it was because for years I've said I can't stand Shia LaBeouf, and this and this film proved me wrong. I think it's a career best for him.
Well, let's dive straight into Shia LaBeouf. Why does he, how you want everyone to pronounce it, but why does he seem so divisive, guys, do you reckon? Will, Helen, do you want to take that first before?
Well, I was going to jump in and say I actually have a lot of time for Shia LaBeouf, and well, I actually really, really enjoy him. I think if you're
Have you seen the Transformers films, though?
I've seen a couple of them.
Okay, right.
But, you know, I've been a fan of him since he's in one of like the really sort of standout ER episodes. And I've seen like Disturbia as well. But I think for me, it was watching Honey Boy recently. That kind of explains a lot about him. And it's a really interesting film. And I just kind of think that, you know, with Transformers, he was quite young. He got offered, you know, this amazing opportunity, probably didn't quite realise they were going to release like 80 of these films and he'd have to do them all. And, you know, he went from being a child actor to being, you know, the biggest movie star on the planet, and inevitably decided that actually he didn't want to be that mainstream and went against it in his own special way, crashing cars, drinking, not really doing very well, and it kind of exploded all in the public eye. So I've got quite a lot of time for him. So I was looking forward to seeing this, having seen some of his more recent efforts, and enjoy it. I think he's very, very complex, but I find him interesting to watch on screen. So that's my shy piece.
So is it more his off-screen antics, you think, that turn people away than his on-screen, apart from maybe just Transformers films are terrible, apart from really Bumblebee? Well, that's my point of view. I don't want to obviously lay that on you guys.
Yeah, I haven't really analysed it that closely. I just, and I'm not really that aware of his off-screen antics, although I kind of, in researching this film, I kind of became a bit more aware of some of the issues that he's gone through. So it's just kind of, I think it is the Transformers thing. He's obviously had his trials. And so, yeah, this could be the start of the LaBeouficence, I guess. or the rebirth.
Yeah.
The rebirth, let's call it that.
Will, what about yourself and Shia?
Yeah, I feel like a bit of a charlatan coming on this podcast sometimes because my sort of in-depth film knowledge is not very in-depth, but I have looked into, I think for him, it's more about his off-screen stuff. He seems like a bit of a badass. He's definitely flirted with alcoholism's a light way of putting it. He's been in trouble, let's put it that way. And I'm quite endeared to him for all that kind of stuff. Although there was this quite unpleasant episode during the making of this film where he essentially got extremely drunk and was very abusive towards some police officers. And then himself and the main character in the film, you know, kind of had it out at a party. I don't know if we're going to come on to this, but there was that sort of moment of, you know, don't mess this up for me, Shia, because it could have just brought the whole film down, his off-screen antics. So it does certainly play into it. But, you know, he's clearly a sort of troubled guy. And I don't know if some of that comes from being a childhood actor. If you look at someone like Macaulay Culkin, they have their issues, to put it politely.
He also did this thing where he must have rented a movie theatre and watched all of his films back to back and filmed the thing. And he also did this weird performance art thing and ended up being sexually assaulted and just lots of very strange things. So, if you want to find out a little bit more about his sort of childhood and growing up, his father was a clown. And his mother was a dancer, I think. Yeah, actually a clown.
That's terrifying.
And Honey Boy is amazing. It's really good. Female director, and he wrote it, and he stars in it as his dad, which is interesting anyway. So if you want to sort of learn a little bit more, and that incident where he has a run-in with the police is included in that. So it's very interesting. But I will leave talking about that because we're talking about this film instead.
Well, I think just to tie that in before going back to the film, which we obviously need to discuss. we have seen with Robert Downey Jr., for example, troubled people coming back into the fray and being accepted. So I'm not sure if I ever have thought a Shia LaBeouf has been as talented as Robert Downey Jr. was, has been, but, you know, if he can come out with troubles and make good films, because this is a good one for my, you know, cards on the table, then all the power to, all the power be it. So what about the rest of the cast here? We have, well, I mean, let's talk about Zach, first of all. In Flixwatch, we haven't talked about many films featuring people with disabilities in any way, shape, or form, but one in the past was The Fundamentals of Caring, and the character with disability was played by an able-bodied actor. And in this is notable. I can't think of many films where I've seen anyone with Down syndrome play substantial roles in films. So this is something that sets it apart straight away.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's part of the charm, really, is that it doesn't kind of sugarcoat or anything or shy away from anything. And in fact, you know, reading about it, it was essentially written for him and written around him and the experiences that he and the writers had together. So a lot of those scenes between him and Shia LaBeouf are kind of based on things that they went through and conversations they had, the writers had with him. So I think that's probably why it comes across so naturally.
And what yourself, Will?
Yeah, I actually, the first thing I did after watching the film was to go and check, you know, was this an actor that has Down syndrome, or was this someone without a disability playing that character? And like you guys, I sort of read up on it and I found that I don't think there are any sort of A-list or sort of big films in which you've had someone with Down syndrome play someone with Down syndrome, to put it that way. And, you know, that was quite striking for me. Thinking of, you know, other films, I sort of thought of Leonardo DiCaprio's performance as the young boy in What's Eating Gilbert Grape, as, you know, as an able-bodied actor playing someone with a disability, is a fantastic performance. But I think in 2020, it's, you know, it's right that someone with Down syndrome should be playing that part. And I thought he played it brilliantly as well. It wasn't just, you know, it was a beautiful performance. And I just warmed to him from the first scene, really. The first time you see him on screen, he's just, you just smile because, you know, he's going to get up to something. You're not quite sure what, but you know it's going to be good, whatever happens. And yeah, I thought it was a fantastic performance.
Completely agree. And it's great that we're finally now getting actual representation on film. I was going to say, the film it kind of reminded me of is when I saw the Station Agent. This sort of similarities with kind of the story and that in it. But also Dakota Johnson, I'm a big fan of and seen her in quite a lot of films. And I think she's kind of great as well. And having Bruce Dern in it just kind of gives it that extra kind of edge, who obviously you've mentioned, Will, was in Nebraska. And this kind of nursing home, care home that they're in, from the moment we meet Zach, he's using one of the residents to help him break out by choking on a chocolate pudding, which sets the tone, I think, quite well for the entire movie. It's just really kind of fun. And, you know, seeing him all greased up and lubed up, escaping out of the bars in the window, you know what this film is going to be. And it's, you know, really joyful.
And I don't think when I describe this, I'll talk about Zach when I do describe it, so I don't really talk about Zach, but it's having Down syndrome, because it's just a standard odd couple kind of almost like buddy cop type film, isn't it? You don't need to that doesn't need to weigh into the story. Shia LaBeouf's character wants to escape, Zach's character wants to escape, and they manage to find each other and say, well, let's just ride together. And everyone's going to have, from that standpoint, no matter which way you put two people together, same sex, same gender, same race, same what, or different, whatever, people tend to make this film spark. People have a difference and different starting point, different way of thinking and experiences that lead into what makes the film sing. And that's what's happening here. Zach wants to escape. He's seen this, he's idolized this wrestler, and he says, right, I just want to be a wrestler. I need to go on this path and do this thing. And obviously, Shia LaBeouf's character, I can't remember his name, he's got troubles.
Tyler.
And he needs to get out. And escape, and they just find each other, and it's great that they get together. They have the kind of, not meet cute, but whenever odd couples kind of start off, it's always like a bit of like a tete-a-tete, isn't it, where they're like, one of them's like, well, don't follow me, mate, and then there's a switcheroo, and then like, oh, come on then, let's just ride together, and we'll be, you know, we'll hang out. And when it happens, you look at Planes, Trains and Automobiles, you know, as an example, this topicals are recording on just after Thanksgiving. But that, I mean, does that seem fair to you, other guys, or is that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's so interesting about it is it is, you know, underneath all the kind of detail, it is basically your kind of buddy road movie. You've got the rookie with a heart who's, you know, still believes in things, and you've got your reluctant kind of grumpy grizzled guy, yeah, who's kind of, you know, don't follow me, like, you know, I don't even want to talk to you. And then you need that kind of, I suppose,
bounty hunter.
It's just occurred to me, it's like, or even Rain Man is like this kind of cynical thing, that it's there's a cynical motivation that he has initially, and then he kind of grows to kind of love, they grow to love each other, really.
And the moment where they kind of realise this is the spectacular part where a child gets punched in the face, which is a great moment.
Is that a cinema first? And probably not, but I can't think of another example off the top of my head where the hero punches a child in the face.
I think, doesn't someone do it in The Hangover Part 2? I think someone punches a child in the face in that. I
can't remember that.
Grievance with that moment. Dirty. I think it's Robert Downey Jr. punches a child in the face. He does it in a film, I think. Maybe. Someone punches a child in the face.
You definitely need a bit of charm to get away with that, don't you?
Sorry, Helen, you were talking about Dakota Johnson. I mean, let's talk about her and also then the other cast in this.
I guess she needs to be there as the kind of bounty hunter or the person on their tails that moves the story along and gives it some kind of urgency alongside. She's the kind of good bounty hunter, and then we've obviously got the bad bounty hunters. And you kind of come to a point where you realise that they're both sort of in the same place, and they're both going through kind of loss and grief, and it's kind of the reason why they are what they are and they're doing what they're doing is all down to one incident. And I think her character could have been quite cheesy, and I think because she's done it, she kind of plays really well against obviously Shia LaBeouf, who is kind of really going for it. She kind of compliments him, I think, by underplaying it and not being kind of hysterical or over the top or anything like that. So I think obviously the main relationship is between Zach and Tyler, but I think she kind of compliments them both, and by having her kind of overly mother him and realize that actually he doesn't need it is sort of needs to happen in the film, so that people can actually realize that people living with Down syndrome can actually, you know, be independent and don't need to be mothered all the time.
100%, yeah. And it's just like that great scene on the water where they're kind of getting Zach to stick his head under the water so that he can't hear them sort of battling for his soul. You know, I love that bit, and it would have been so easy. I think you're right, Helen. I mean, it's a great performance, and it could have very easily just been a kind of a cipher, but she really invests it with kind of emotion, and you know, you really believe her.
And whilst they're shoving his head under the water, or he's doing it to prove that he can hold his breath for the time, what's lovely about that scene is whilst they're battling for his soul, as Ben was saying, he's kind of proving Tyler's point. Do you see what I mean? It's quite a nice little, I think that scene on the water, on the raft, and also the sort of the Mark Twain-esque echoes there is probably the scene of the film, actually, for me.
And he pulls out the fish.
Yeah.
He's just busy getting on with it, isn't he? Yeah.
He's caught the fish. Yeah. There's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor. Quick, kill it.
Yeah, he just smashes it down, like, yeah. And then they eat it, yeah. So
there is, I mean, I think the other thing I love about it is there is a kind of a lyrical, mythical sort of quality to it, a bit like A Brother Where Art Thou or something like that. It does feel kind of lyrical, and you know, they even meet a blind preacher who helps them on their way. You know, it's got that sort of dreamlike quality at times.
So Helen, you talked about the good bounty hunter, and let's talk about the bad bounty hunter, and also I guess we can talk a bit about the other cast in here. John Hawkes is the bad bounty hunter, and he's always someone whenever I see him on screen, I'm like, yeah, okay, let's see what he's got to say.
He's quite scary, isn't he? Every time he's on the screen, you're like, oh God, what's going to happen? And yeah, it you know, something is going to happen, and when it eventually does, it's not pleasant. And he kind of manages to
bring that quite level of nastiness in quite of a small presence as well, because, you know, he's not this big guy, but you can just kind of sense that he's on a mission. And it's basically he's pissed off because he's had his kind of like crab business burnt down to the ground. That's his
thing. Fair enough,
but there might have been something before then as well. You kind of sense that there's been kind of bad blood between them for a while. But yeah, scary guy.
The other scary thing about it is he's not, he seems very real. He's not kind of just this ultra evil person. He's basically trying to look after his business, you know, in the worst way possible. But it's kind of, for him, it's a practical thing as well. It's like he can't have other people thinking they can do this sort of thing to him. So, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to have to shoot you in your hand. Which one do you fancy?
It just seems everyone's come from, no one's having a good time of it at the moment where they are. Everyone's having a hard time, and to lose £12,000 worth of equipment, $12,000, and that being the whole source of his livelihood, you can see why he's super angry. So as a bad bounty hunter, quote unquote, you can see that the motivation there, it just obviously takes it to extremes where I can definitely imagine that happening in real life, where they're just like, well, I need to get my money back somehow because otherwise I can't live.
They've not heard of insurance. Insurance covers these type of things.
Well, they might not have insurance. You don't know.
Yeah. Especially where that's
set. There'd be no story then. I'm just being silly. Also, we've not mentioned the saltwater redneck, Thomas Hayden Church, who, it makes me sad that some people will only ever know him for being the Sandman, but he's always kind of like a welcome appearance in it, as obviously a wrestler whose days are over. And, you know, Zach arrives at the wrestling school 10 years too late. But he realizes that actually he can't let him down, and they end up doing some pretty good wrestling, which is always good to see.
Yeah, Thomas Hayden Church. Yeah, I think I knew him first from Sideways, but yeah, to be honest, I still haven't seen Sandman 3 because everyone know that loved the first two came back and were almost in tears. So I just thought I don't need to watch it.
The other character in it is, I was looking at the cast list, it was Mick Foley's in it. I was trying to work out who he was. Was he the referee in the ring at the end? Is that
he was? Yeah,
yeah.
Played Mankind. So you had referee, and also you had Mick Foley and Jake Snake Roberts. And this is what I'm talking about the cast. The cast is kind of nicely peppered with people who are just like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, them.
Yeah. From my teenage days, watching a little bit of WWF, I was like, oh, it's Mick Foley. That was just really nice, a nice touch. But yeah, I had to double check. He was the referee. Yeah. No, it was, that was sweet.
The cast is great. And I think it's interesting reading about how the casting came about, because initially the two writers, you know, hadn't made a film before, I understand. And they really got their break when Josh Brolin got involved. And
And
he was originally going to play the saltwater redneck. And I think he had to drop out when he got cast in Deadpool 2.
Right.
And it was Ben, but it was his involvement that got Ben Foster involved, who then called Shia LaBeouf when he had to drop out. So there's quite a...
Oh, was Ben Foster supposed to be Shia LaBeouf's character?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That would have been, because he did that, it would have been kind of a similar film. What was that film he did with Thomas and McKenzie? Oh, Leave No Trace. Yeah, so Ben Foster was in a quite a highly lauded film, not successfully commercially, but Leave No Trace, where he played a father with a daughter who they kind of were nomads, and they kind of you saw them going bouncing from place to place, living their life. So this could have been very similar to that.
Yeah, and apparently as soon as Shia LaBeouf got the script, he was like, "I'm in." So all credit to him for seeing the potential.
Yeah.
There's just one other scene. I'm going back a bit here, but you know the scene where they're both on the raft, it's just the two of them without Dakota Johnson, and Zach puts his arm around Shia's character.
Oh yeah.
That was actually, you know, that was spontaneous. That wasn't meant to happen. And when Shia sort of breaks down, I think that may have been around the time that they'd had this big fallout in real life. And so that coming together of the two characters on screen was actually a sort of coming together of the two men. And I think if you watch that scene again, it is very powerful. And I think it's kind of half acted, half just genuine.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of pivotal as well, isn't it? And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful scene.
Then he slaps him on the face.
That's like a Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now sort of moment.
Yeah.
I think one thing I want to talk about is I love Dakota Johnson in this. But I was a bit annoyed about the kind of romance bit tacked in there. Did you think that was necessary? Could they not just carried on as good friends?
Well, Kobe, come on. We need a bit of romance.
Is there romance?
Yeah, they kiss.
It's not overly romance, though, is it? We don't know what's going to happen. It kind of leaves it a little bit open-ended.
Mm. Well, I think, fair enough. Maybe guys are happy with that.
They've both experienced extreme loss. Do they not deserve maybe a chance at happiness?
Maybe.
Oh my gosh.
Let's head to the scores.
I think if it had turned into the main driver for the film partway through, then it would have been irritating. But it's still the kind of the main relationship, I think, for me. And I think it plays it like that is between Tyler and Zach, and that, you know, it's their friendship driving it through. It's just that,
yeah,
it's kind of coincidental that maybe that there's something else going on.
There's just enough there, I think, to kind of drive things along. You know, but they don't kind of overplay it at all.
No.
And I quite like the feeling of them all driving off together.
Oh, yeah, I like them driving off together.
I thought he was dead. You know, it did look like, from her reaction, I thought, yeah, are they going to kill him off? That's a brave move. And they didn't. Spoiler.
In Kobe's defense, I think it's kind of inevitable that there is going to be some kind of romance between the two of them. And you can sort of see that in some of the earlier scenes. And I did think, oh no, it's going to turn into a slightly cheesy rom-com. So I think they just about get away with it, but I definitely think Kobe has a point here.
Well, let's head to the scores.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have come from the worlds of film, television, music, food, comedy, and podcasting. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Ben, with your recommendability.
I would recommend this to pretty much anyone, I think. I think it's just such a great... It feels good, but it's earned. It's gritty. I would recommend it to almost anyone, unless you're just such a total cynic that you just can't handle. I'd recommend it to pretty much anyone, so I would give it a 4.6.
Will?
I'm the same as Ben. I think it's extremely universal film. I'd just give it a 5. I'd recommend it to anyone. I can't think of anyone that wouldn't watch it, so yeah.
Helen?
I mean, if this is a film for me, it's got like me written all over it. Like, without even having to watch it, I could just kind of tell this is my film. I think there will be some people who won't enjoy it, and they'll find it a bit slow, and they'll be a bit like, well, what's kind of the point of it? You know, what's really going to happen? So I don't think it is for everyone, although I think it may surprise some people who maybe didn't think that it was for them. So I'm going to give it a 4.9.
Oof, look at that. I'm going to give it a 4.8. I was going to give it a 5, but then Helen kind of made me think, are there people who would find this slow?
What have I done? I've given the lowest rating to the film.
It happens sometimes. It happens quite a lot. But yeah, I don't see why I wouldn't recommend it to people, but there might be, you know, someone who I think, actually, you're a bit of an idiot, and you wouldn't get it. But I can't think of it off the top of my head, so that's why I take it out a couple of notches. Repeat viewing score, Ben.
Well, I've seen it. This is the third time I've watched it.
Oh, wow.
And I don't normally rewatch films anymore. I don't have the time. So I'm going to give it a 4.7 for rewatchability. I do think it's not the kind of film necessarily where you're going to find lots of other things in it, but I just think it's one of those films that it's going to be one of those films, if it's on and you sit down and you switch the TV on and it's on, you're going to probably watch it.
Will?
I, like Ben, also don't rewatch too many films, and I tend to agree. I don't know if there's masses in there that you're going to find new. I think it's I loved it. It's a great film, so I'd probably just give it a 4, to be honest.
That's still very high. Helen.
Unusual, I've not mentioned the runtime. 1 hour 37 is the golden zone of film time. So yeah, it's really nice. It's kind of one of those films that I think I'll probably end up being kind of alongside the Garden State type films, where it's one that I'll probably end up going back to and enjoying. So I'm going to give it a 4. I've only seen it once. It's quite a new film. It only came out last year, didn't it? So it's got plenty of time.
So what was your score, sorry?
4.
4? I don't think I'm going to watch it that much. I'm going to give it down the middle, 2.5. If someone hasn't seen it and they want to watch it, I'll happily sit down and watch it. But I'm not sure it's going to be up there with my rewatchable buddy Odd Couple films, of which I hold kind of Planes, Trains and Automobiles as the high bar. So yeah, 2.5 down the middle. Small screen score, Ben.
I think it's great on a small screen. It pulls you in. It's one of those films. I think you could even watch it on a tablet or something, and you'd still be fully engaged. And the score sounds great, but it's not the sort of film that necessarily needs, 5.1 megamax Dolby. It's just really nice, really nice sound, really nice music. So I'm going to give it a 5.
Will.
How small are our small screens? Give me a context here, sorry.
We just say not in a cinema, essentially. So TV watching.
Okay.
Netflix. For Netflix. Home viewing at Netflix.
Or your laptop. I guess a lot of people still watch films on laptops.
I'm going to give it 3 for this, just because some of it is very beautiful in terms of the southern states where they are, and the kind of the swamplands and the lakes and that. So I think it would be quite nice actually to see it in a cinema. So I say 3.5 for small screen for me.
Helen.
I'm going to give it a 5 as well. I would have liked to have seen this at the cinema, although I can't remember it coming out, just to obviously support independent films. But I think it works fine on a small screen. And I think it's one of those ones that nobody really ever particularly knew about, and it became a bit of a kind of a sleeper hit on Netflix. I know that a lot of people I know have kind of seen it and recommended it to other people on Netflix, and it's kind of grown like that. So, a 5.
Yeah, I'm going to go for one other thing, by the way. I was just going to say, in reference to Will's previous appearance with Nebraska, of course, that was a great kind of Odd Couple with Bruce Dern and his son, which is a great film to watch. And I think that's probably someone I'd rewatch more than The Peanut Butter Falcon, because I think it's just so terribly grouchy. but yeah, I'm going to go for 5, small screen score, same as Helen. I would have liked to see this in cinema, but I think it works fantastically on small screen. So yeah, engagement score, Ben.
It's a solid 5. I was fully engaged all the way through. There's no checking of text. There's no, heading off or anything like that. I just think it's every single scene for me is kind of perfect and had me fully engaged. So I don't think there's any point really where it dips. Just from start to finish, I'm really engaged. So it's a 5.
Will?
Yeah, I'll back that up. I think it's also a 5. I watched it all the way through, obviously. That's how linear things work, isn't it? I was fully engaged. Each scene worked. It was a good pace. As Helen said, it's in that kind of sweet spot. It's not too long. Fully engaged with it. It's a great film.
Helen?
I'm going to be a little bit lower, but I think give it a 4.5. I think the pace of it and its sort of style means that this is one that you could probably have on in the background once you've seen it once, and just kind of like dip in and dip out. I think it's sort of very laid back, isn't it, in terms of how it moves along. So I think that for the engagement is kind of like, oh yeah, I'm just kind of going along with it. So I think if you you don't have to be super engaged to kind of get what's going to happen and where you are.
I'm going to go for a 4. I think it's really nice kind of flowing film. I don't think you have to be super like dialed into it. The romance bit did make me think, oh, for fuck's sake. and also there is the, at no point did I think they weren't going to meet the wrestler. But so I was kind of like, yeah, it's going to happen. You're going to see him. He's going to walk away, and then he's going to that's exactly what happened. But what I did like was that the bounty hunter, the bad guy, bounty hunter, did actually catch up with him. So I thought they managed to escape somehow, don't they? So I thought it was quite a nice twist that they actually caught up with him and did do him some damage. And the wrestling scene at the end was pretty fun, actually. I thought it was a really good way to finish it. So he kind of went up and down, but overall a 4 for me. And that gives an overall score of 4.46875. Pretty high.
It's really high.
Yeah.
Good show.
Should we head to Twitter? By the way, everyone listening, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. Every time we go in for recording, we put a little shout out asking for people's opinions. And in this case, we said we're reviewing the Peanut Butter Falcon with Ben from Rockwood Audio and Will Rowe at WillRowe2 from The Times. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score for out of 5 for a shout out on FlixWatcher. And we have a couple of responses. Will?
So, Nick H, wear a mask, you selfish F... **KS. I think that's fucks. 4 out of 5. Delightful and surprising with excellent performances. Pretty solid review.
Second one is from previous guest, Sudden Double Deep. Adored that film. Not too saccharine. Genuinely lovely buddy dynamic and not quite what I expected. 4 Peanut Butter Falcons out of 5 Peanut Butter Falcons.
Nice. Well, Ben and Will, can you start off by telling listeners where they can find you online, and we'll say goodbye to everyone.
Okay. You can find me at rockwoodaudio.com. That's rokkwood.com. And you can find me on Twitter at rockwoodaudio.
And you can find me at willrowe2. That's my Twitter profile. And if you search for Stories of Our Times, wherever you get your podcasts, you can listen to all the daily news shows that myself and 4 other wonderful producers produce.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.